Blog Talk Radio.
So this is Cal Nez, and you're listening to Navajo Politics with Cal Nez. And this is Navajo Internet Radio. Tonight is another night of talking about Navajo politics. And I think that a lot of you out there probably getting my posts by now. So let's get on the air and call in The telephone number here is 323-642-1708. So everybody, please, out there, if you have any comments, and even just to say hello, you know, give me a call, and, you know, just to, you know, let's see who's the furthest caller from wherever, from throughout the world. Literally, that's where a lot of the this internet radio is going through. So, quite interesting. A lot of stuff going on here. A lot of posts, and the dialogue is. This radio show is a continuation of the Facebook group page called Navajo Politics. And so, let me just read a couple of things here. This is according to Navajo Times, written by Bill Donovan. Complaint against the Cheney's candidacy not filed in time. This has been quite a bit of a discussion. And so I want to get your thoughts on that. And in an attempt by a group of Navajos as well as unsuccessful candidates for the for the president to get Chris Cheney removed from the general election ballot has failed. Officials for the Navajo Nation Office of Hearings and Appeals said Wednesday that all of the grievances filed against Cheney for not being able to speak Navajo fluent have been dismissed for not being filed in a timely manner. Cheney, who came in second in the August primary, has been open to his lack of ability to speak Navajo. And it goes on to talk about the that the Office of Hearing and Appeals dismissed the grievances filed against him. And so that's something that I think that people are pretty much aware of. And I think that there are talks about the Navajo Nation or the Navajo voters looking at other options to, you know, I don't know if there's going to be an opportunity for people to challenge it. I'm not sure on that. But so far, people have said that the right, you know, the write-in candidate is not an option, and that a citizen cannot file against a candidate. And so there's all sorts of things that are stopping this whole process. And for unknown reason, there's a lot of discussion on Facebook, but every time I bring up this issue here, a lot of the you know, a lot of the citizens are not willing to come online and talk about this very, very important issue. So excuse me. And so the some of the groups that had filed, this is really kind of interesting. It also further reads, the group's petition argues that the election office should have conducted a background investigation into the candidates running for president to make sure that they meet all the qualifications. And Johnny R. Thompson, who was a former vice chair under Peter McDonald, he was the deputy director, and he was the acting when Edison Winika was running this past summer. And Johnny R. Thompson, who oversaw the primary before he retired last week, so I guess he's retired, so maybe he's bailing out at the right moment, but before he retired last week, was questioned during the primary about this Cheatney's status as a candidate before his problem, because of his problems with the Navajo language. He said the election board was not prepared to give candidates a test on their ability to speak Navajo before they qualified as a candidate. He also pointed out that the election board does not, by policy, check on allegations such as this without a complaint being filed by someone, and no complaints were filed during the grievance period after the deadline for filing as a candidate. Now, let me read this one other part, or no, this again. Johnny R. Thompson said this. The election board was not prepared to give candidates a test on their ability to speak Navajo. He also said the election board does not, by policy, check on the allegations such as this without a complaint. Well, that absolutely makes no sense to me, because also the reason why that the Office of Hearing and Appeals rejected this thing again is they had indicated that the complaint against from one candidate against another candidate should have been made for the May deadline. So now think about that. A grievance is a grievance, whether it happens post-primary or during that. And in fact, just for your information, I have confirmed for tomorrow night's show, the director of the Office of Hearings and Appeal, he will be my guest, Mr. Richie Nez. And I'm going to talk to him specifically how that he determined which grievance applied to what, because, you know, there is no clause or statement or provision, anything stating that if you're going to complain against a candidate for whatever reason, whether it's about the inability to speak Navajo or whatever it is, should it have been made in the first one or the second one? And does it really matter? Because there's no provision that says, okay, you can complain about a candidate in the first one, but not the second one. So there's all these issues that are floating around out there. And so, again, the phone line is open right now, and we have about an hour and 16 minutes. This is Cal Nez. You're listening to Navajo Politics with Cal Nez. And I will. Any callers that are calling in, I will bring them on. And so I appreciate everybody out there. Ahiado, toyateto, ahiad. I sa adhashin zaret, nada isyo kizota isanosta ako. Ako di kwa anahot ito kwa ba anahat? Kuro ni to ni nata si nildo lish ilo e. You know, in my opinion, you know, just sitting back and not addressing this issue, you know, is it going to set a precedent? Are we going to really live by our laws or not live by our laws? A lot of people are now getting to the point where they're saying, no, we don't want to talk about this anymore. It's old information. A lot of these issues are very, very deep-rooted. And I also, you know, this ongoing issue about the Navajo oil and gas, there's an article written in the Navajo Times last week that's talking about the oil and gas, and there's some pretty intense words that are being exchanged with between the Navajo Nation Council and Peterson Zaw and Paul Fry, an attorney from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And for all those listeners out there, please know that this coming Wednesday, I'm going to have Leonard L. Sothi, who is the board of director chairperson for the Navajo Oil and Gas, and Louis Danette Sothi, who is the CEO of the Navajo Nation Oil and Gas. So tonight's topic, again, is the this Navajo Nation election. So we have a caller that's calling in, and I'd like to welcome this caller. And hello, caller. Your name?
Danny.
Well, hello. How's it going?
Great. Yate. So,
yeah,
so,
what's your thoughts on this?
Well, one issue I think that is very relevant, respect to all of the regulations of when a complaint could be filed and when a complaint cannot be filed, is if you have a candidate who should know what the requirements are, and they put themselves forward as a candidate knowing that they don't meet one or more of the criteria, what you have is a less than honest candidate. And so whether the different boards of election wants to carry out their responsibilities, that's one thing. But dealing with that candidate themselves, whether did you, sir, know what the criteria was before you signed up? Now, if they said no, well, that's an ignorant person, not worthy of holding high office. If they say, yes, I knew, but I went ahead and put my name down anyway, thinking that I could get away with it, well, the people have to decide whether that's the kind of person they want for high office.
Well, having said that, well, the fellow is already, we're talking about Chris Descheny, and he said that he, like I read in Navajo Times this, you know, just now, the guy says, I'm willing to learn on the job. What's
well,
your thoughts on
but
that?
You see, there are criteria, and you hit on it, you know, whether people are willing. Look, everybody needs to get a shot, okay? Learning on the job is fine. But, I mean, as a candidate, he has responsibilities to communicate with people. And if he cannot communicate with the, well, here's the question. I mean, is the Navajo language something that you can learn in 2 days, 2 weeks? I mean, where do you put it?
Well, according to a language training center in Provo, Utah, they said that the Navajo language is probably one of the hardest languages in the world.
So they're putting
so
it in
not,
what,
not definitely
5 years?
10 days. So it probably
where was somebody who wants to be president of the Navajo Nation that they didn't have the opportunity to speak the language? Were they did they grow up in a home with non-Navajo people? Did they grow up off the reservation? I mean, there's a lot of deep questions here that could be asked, and as you say, nobody wants to ask them, but since I've got the mic, here's one. Okay, you've got an adult who has had many opportunities, whether anyone taught them or not, but once they became an adult, they had the ambition, if they wanted to learn something like a cultural aspect of their traditions. Well, for whatever reason, they didn't learn it, okay? Well, that mm-hmm. might forfeit you for becoming president simply because you didn't meet one of the criteria. I don't know how important people think today knowing the language is, but once it is still a law or part of the requirements, you have to say you got to follow the law, because if you don't, then how are you going to hold somebody accountable when they say, look, you didn't follow that law, Mr. President. Why do you want me to follow this one?
That's a very good point. Now, here's one interesting bit of information. And for all the listeners out there, you know, there's two front runners. There's Joe Shirley Jr. and his vice president selection was Dineh Benali. And over here we have Chris Deschini, and he selected a Fannie Lou Etcity, and she is an educator. Now, just keep in mind that I'm not just going to pick on Chris. Well, I'm not just going to talk about Chris Deschini and his issues. Joe is going to get his turn here
Yeah. I heard that the young man who came in second was doing very well in the polls until he picked his vice presidential candidate. So it may be moot that the fact that he picked who he picked might take him out of circulation. That's what I heard.
Yeah. And also, he's an attorney also. Now, what does that tell you about... Yeah, I mean, first you said he's an adult, he should have known, and you signed the paper, and but then on top of that, his profession is to be an attorney, or
he should know better, and maybe as most attorneys, they think they're above the law. I can tell you that, knowing people in the profession, attorneys feel that the law is for everybody but them. So maybe that's the way he's coming at it.
Yeah. So now, having said that about the language, people went in there and filed some complaint, and they were turned down because they said that there was two periods of grievance filing. One was right after the candidates' filing closing date, which is at the end of May, and the second one was in April. So now the question was that they're saying is that, well, your argument after primary is not the right grievance. You should have been grieving that in May.
In my humble opinion, when you are addressing a concern that has to do with the very basic qualification, there is no period for a grievance. It's simply if the person qualifies. This is not one of those technical issues. This is It boils down to whether the person qualifies or not. It's like President of the United States. You need to be at least 30 years or whatever it is for a senator. Okay, if you're not 30, you're just out. You don't meet the criteria. It doesn't matter. You know, one of the criteria for President of the United States, you have to be born in the U.S. That's why Arnold Schwarzenegger, as much as he was very popular back in the day, he couldn't run for president. He wasn't born here.
Is the president of the United States, are they required to speak English? What if somebody doesn't speak English and runs for the office?
I think that'd be a tough one, although that is not written down as one of the requirements. But if in the Navajo Nation it's a requirement. By the way, it's just common sense, I tell you what. That'd be like saying somebody is running for the president of Mexico, but they're a gringo, you know? And let's face it, okay? Let's say you have the president of Mexico running, or somebody wants to run for president of Mexico. They grew up in the United States, and they go back to Mexico, and they say, look, I'm putting myself up for office. Even if there wasn't a law, it would be really foolish for that person not to be able to speak the native language. So, hey, the Navajo Nation is a nation, okay? That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's a nation. How could you have somebody running for the highest office who does not speak the language of that nation?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a common sense issue.
Yeah.
Now, all of these regulatory agencies could hide behind not doing their job and say, well, you didn't file by this time and you didn't file by that time. Look, this is such a fundamental issue. If the man can't speak the language, it's really tough to expect him to serve his people adequately. That's all I'm saying.
And that's one of the things that, I mean, you know, that's a very good point. One of the things that I was saying is that a grievance is a grievance. It doesn't matter, you know, we have an election, you know, there's a first grievance and the second grievance.
But
when
I don't think it matters.
A grievance is a grievance.
But this issue doesn't fall into a technical grievance that could get washed down the drain. This is, look, sir, give your speech in Navajo, and if you can't do it, you shouldn't be up on the stage. I mean, listen. Look, I mean, how could you even justify? I mean, we shouldn't even be talking about this because this is such a fundamental issue with respect to governing a nation. Trying to say, okay, we're going to have a prime minister of France that doesn't speak French. Are we going to have somebody running to be prime minister of England, but they don't speak English? You know? I mean, it's just a common sense issue, and it makes a big mockery of the election and of the Navajo people.
Yeah. Very good point. And his reply, Mr. Deschutney's reply, I'm trying to find that here in the newspaper, in reference to, here it is. Let me read it. In a statement released Wednesday afternoon, Deschutney responded to the decision by the Office of Hearing and Appeals to dismiss the grievances filed against him. Here's what Mr. Deschutney said. These grievances were a clear attempt to our tremendous momentum, Deschutney said. The nation demonstrated its confidence in our campaign with its vote in August, and it's disgraceful that a few people are trying to ignore and subvert the will of the voters. The truth
is
that thousands
of
our children are struggling to the truth is that thousands of our children are struggling to preserve our language, and many see my success as an inspiration.
Well, that may be
that was his response.
Well, you know, it's a very good political statement. But the question is, was he aware of all of the requirements? By the way, if he missed this one, who knows what else he may have missed, okay? You know, is this the only thing that he didn't check the right box on? I don't know. You know, this should open up an entire credibility issue with respect to any candidate, not just this particular guy. Now, he seems like a smart guy if he's a lawyer. By the way, if he thinks he should learn on the job, it should have been, he should have already conquered that. Maybe in the next 4 years, if he takes the next 4 years and learn, he could come back then. But as far as now, the dude doesn't meet the criteria.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
if people want to vote for him nonetheless, you know, this brings up the Obama situation. You remember when the birthers were saying Obama wasn't a United States citizen? Of course, they were wrong.
Yeah.
That was just stuff that they were making that up. But they were saying that he wasn't a United States citizen. And if he wasn't a United States citizen, he didn't meet the criteria, plain and simple. Obviously, that was hogwash. He did. Now, what this gentleman needs to do is he needs to say, I can speak, and here's my proficiency. Let the people decide. Maybe he can know two words, three words. Maybe he can know a whole sentence. Maybe he can really speak. That has to be answered. And that would put that to rest, plain and simple. All he needs to come out is give a speech in Navajo. That'd take care of it.
Well, you know, during the campaign, see, this is where a lot of the argument comes in, and that is that what is considered, who is the expert on what exactly is a perfect Navajo, and who's going to sit there and judge
There's a basic conversation. If you can speak on a 6th grade level or a 12th grade level, I mean, you pass the test, okay? I mean,
but
if you can't speak at all.
But does that make you fluent?
Well,
I mean, I can probably pass the test by going and reading a sentence and memorizing a sentence and standing there
No, we're talking about conversation. We're talking about the ability to engage. If somebody asks you a question, for instance, in your introduction, you spoke for at least 3 or 4 minutes in Navajo. Would he know what you say and be able to respond back to you and carry on a conversation in that level? That's what we're talking about.
Well, yeah, well, you know, here's one interesting thing. There's a lot of Navajos out there who don't speak Navajo, but they understand Navajo.
Right. Well, did you say that the requirement is fluency?
Fluency, yes.
Well, fluency has its own definition. Fluency, in my way of thinking, is that means that you're proficient in speaking and understanding. That's what fluency means.
And the Navajo language, so in other words, the ability to converse back and forth in Navajo, whether it's just on basics or in-depth Navajo or
any
language.
I would say it would be a presidential level. If you're running for president, okay, I mean, you ought to be able to not only speak to kindergarten kids if you go out and you're talking to a school, but you need to be able to speak to the elders fluently, because remember, there's a lot of people that are Navajo that don't speak anything but Navajo.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay, so how would you adequately represent those people and speak with them and address their issues if you can communicate to those that only speak Navajo?
Yeah, and that was one of the interesting things that was brought up on the on Facebook, and that was that, you know, this is a real, real concern. Writes somebody, and that is that, how do we know that if we cut this character loose into the Navajo grassroots level, that he's able to articulate rightfully and communicate and understand and carry out his duties on behalf of the elderly people?
Right. But I see a much deeper fundamental issue. This is this. Let's say that he does meet the criteria in fluency, and he might be using that as a, you know, a ploy, have people think. It's just like Obama. You know, it took him a long time for him to bring out his birth paper and drop it on Trump and say, shut up, okay, here it is, shut up, okay? So maybe that's what this guy is doing. He could speak Navajo, but he's letting everybody have their say, and at some point he's going to come out and give the most eloquent speech in Navajo and communicate and answer questions, and everybody going to say, oh, yeah, bravo, great, just like they did with Obama when he pulled out his birth certificate, okay? Or it may be that this guy doesn't. And if he doesn't, that has to be addressed. I mean, it means that this is a false pretense candidacy. And if it's false pretense in something like the language, it might be false pretense on a lot of other issues. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Here's a excuse me. Here's another thought. You know, are we as the Navajo voters, are we looking at this whole thing from the standpoint that are we just nitpicking at one particular person, or is this about the issues related to the Office of Election Administration?
Well,
who didn't do its job? Who didn't do its
job? You've got a number of weaknesses in the system, it appears. Now, where have you ever heard a guy resigning or retiring before an election cycle is completed? That's a little bit odd. Did he retire?
That is the acting deputy director. Yes, when Edison Winika, who is the director, he ran as a candidate, but he never resigned. I don't know whether he was on administrative. I don't know what it was, but of course he didn't finish, you know, the top two, so he just went back to his job, and now Johnny R. Thompson, who was running the show, he's retired now. So maybe there's a reason why he's jumping ship.
Well, I mean, but I've never heard anybody plan their retirement for a job like that right in the middle of the soup before it's finished. I mean, if he retired after the November election or whenever it is, you can see, okay, that's a complete cycle. He did his job, but that needs a little looking into. I mean, in other words, did he jump or did he get pushed?
We don't know. I mean, he's certainly back. He's gone by now. But on his way out, he basically said, you know, we don't have any way of checking people. We just assume that everybody's telling the truth, was basically what he said.
Well, not only that. I mean, if it's a requirement, you can't say that you don't have the mechanism to do your job. That's part of your job description, to make sure that these candidates meet the criteria. So I would say there's a lot of soft spots on this whole issue, to say the least, and there could be way more than just being soft on the issues. There could be culpability in the fact that people look the other way. A lot of times people chalk it up that, you know, we don't want to rock the boat and we have other bigger issues to worry about, and why are we worrying about this? And I hear it all the time. But, you know, the people don't get to change the law just on a whim. Now, if they want to drop that criteria, there's got to be a formal procedure for which you say, you know, we no longer feel that's necessary. But you can't just arbitrarily throw it in. That's what you call anarchy, you know. All of a sudden, people start picking the laws that they like and dropping the ones that they don't like. You know, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So, you know, that's one of the things that I brought up. And, well, I mean, you hit it right on the head. People are now saying, gee, you know what, why are we beating this to death? Well, the reason why we're beating this to death is because it needs to be beaten to death, because we are at that juncture in our culture now that how important it really comes down. It's not so much about the whether it's language or not. You know, the last election was about whether a woman should become a president, and so that was a cultural issue. Now we got two men finishing, but now we're talking about language. So in both cases, in my opinion,
I think it's an indicator
of where we are with our, you know, how important is the Navajo culture to us?
Well, from what I heard, the woman issue is right back front and center by virtue of who this gentleman picked as his running mate. He has made it an issue all over again, because a vice presidential candidate has to be ready to assume office. You know, if this guy trips and falls and whatever, his vice president moves into the big house. So I heard that any hopes that he might have given Joe Shirley a run for the money might have just been dashed. That's
yeah.
what I heard. That just word on the street. Now I don't know.
Yeah, here's something that's really interesting. A case was filed in Supreme Court today regarding what we're talking about, and that is to disqualify him. I don't know who is who did the filing and under what language, but I would assume that somebody. I mean, everybody's just saying, it just cannot be undone. It is what it is, and we're going to move forward, and we're just going to have to take this pill and swallow it, is basically
okay,
what it turned out to be.
Let's stop, right there. Let's say that people want to go down that road, okay? How many pills are we going to have to end up taking? Because I have my own pill that I would like you to swallow. Okay, so if you want me to swallow your pill, I might have a few pills for you.
Yeah.
So, I think that people must be held to accountability and to make the hard decisions. That's what leadership is about. And sometimes there comes a time when you have to say, look, you know what, I made a mistake. You might want to do a mea culpa, ask for forgiveness, but you can't sweep everything under the rug. That's when it's big chunks. Chunks don't go under the rug.
And I totally agree with that, because one of the things that was taking place with the, there, heaven forbid, I mean, for the past, 10 years now, our nation, the Navajo Nation, has just been plagued with one thing or another. We've got this Navajo Nation legislative going against the executive office and personalities, and now we have the discretionary fund. And then we hear monies being taken at the chapter level, which is like our county seats, and just all the way across the Navajo Nation. And now we hit the election, we're hoping for new beginning, new thoughts, new everything, and all of a sudden here we are back to square one, and a lot of people are like saying, you know what, enough is enough, let's just, but I thought that's what the election was all about, was that enough is enough, that we got to have dishonest people, but the continuation of this is going, and this person should have known, is what a lot of people are saying. He's an adult, he's an attorney, he should have known, he should have just recused himself and not run. Or let's just let it go and let's move forward. But you know what? If we do one thing, it sets a precedent for another thing, talking about pills.
Sure. So, hey, whatever happened to those chapter buildings that burned down? Did we ever find out if there was bad electrical wiring in both of them?
We don't know. Here's one of the things that I know. This is just hearsay. I can, but people from that particular office was that somebody had just they had a file or a petition filed against them for embezzlement or something along that line from those areas. So there's
right.
a speculation there. So
right.
hey, I'm going to bring one other person on. Let's see who this person is and see what their thoughts are. Maybe they're just calling in just to listen in, or maybe they have a comment, and then we can just have a three-way discussion and just leave it here out for let's just quit, sitting back and not worrying about this thing. Caller 2562 is your last. Where are you calling from and your name? Or are you just calling in just to listen in? Well, I can hear them, but I guess they're not willing to talk. So, So back to these chapters. Burning.
So hard to die, and then the business went
Hello, hello. I can hear you. So, yeah. Anyway, you're listening to Navajo Politics with Cal Nez, and we're continuing to talk about this thing, and people willing, hey, please call in. The telephone number here is 323-642-1708. And this is Cal Nez, and we have a caller who's got some pretty interesting dimension to what we're talking about. You're bringing up some very good points here. So, having beaten this thing to this point now, what do you see could be some of the possible resolution to this thing? Does the guy just say, "Hey, you know, I've come this far, I spent thousands of dollars. I'm sorry, I'll just have to recuse myself"?
I put this in the same category like Obama during the election, when people used the fact that he was not a U.S. citizen, okay? He never really addressed that. You know, he kind of did the kind of rope-a-dope with that issue.
Kind of skirted around it.
Yeah. I think that he thought that was so ridiculous for him to bring that up. I am not justifying that. But then it started to pick up momentum, and it started to become a distraction. And then Donald Trump started to use that as a Trump. And I think Obama people told him, "Look, you need to go out there and shut this dude down, okay? Because, you know, we can't do anything. Every time we turn around, there's Donald Trump talking about, you know, and Obama is not even a citizen." So the president came out and he said, "Look, you know, I didn't want to have to do this, but it's really getting in the way of real issues. Here's my birth certificate. This is the last time I'm going to say anything about it. Here it is. Shut up, Donald, and you're done." Okay? And we never heard anything from Donald Trump again after that. Okay? So this dude might be able to use a page from the President of the United States, which is, you know what, if you got your birth certificate, bring it out and show it and move on. If you don't have one, could you imagine if President Obama up until now didn't bring out his birth certificate, what would happen? People would still be talking about it. Donald Trump would still be running his mouth. He'd be in every talk show, just going and going and going. And you know, we don't hear anything about the birthers anymore. And if anybody brings that up today, people look at them like, enough is enough, okay? I saw the birth certificate. It says Hawaii on it. That's enough for me. Same thing with this gentleman. He could put this to rest by simply saying, okay, you know, everybody made this an issue. It's time to move on, like he wants to move on. And he could just give the most eloquent speech. And like you say, not just a speech that could be rehearsed and somebody talking in a teleprompter in your ear, but really to engage people and carry a conversation so that everybody could say, yeah, I think the dude is proficient. I think he is fluent. I mean, fluency is not a guess. You know, it's not a sliding scale. You know if somebody is fluent or if they're not. If you want to know if somebody is fluent, you know, if somebody's dying, you say, hey, give them mouth to mouth. Do you give them mouth to mouth, or you thought they said doubt to doubt? You know, that's a life and death situation right there. You know, fluency means that when the rubber hits the road, you know, you can count on your president to come through because he knows what's going on.
So move on.
I would say the way that you move on is to put it to rest. You know, just skip over the you know, you can't skip over this. It's not going to work. You know, that's a recipe for disloyalty. That's a recipe for people saying, you know, if the president, you know, one of the reasons that people, and I keep using the president of the United States because there's some good parallels. There's a lot, there was a thing with some police officer or some sheriff saying he is not going to uphold the law because the president of the United States is not upholding the law. Okay, let's say the president of the United States did break a law, okay? It really does give people the right to say, hey, you know, if the president could do it, I want to do it. And then you have a breakdown of law and order. I mean, there is no moral authority of a president to hold its people to accountability if the president himself. That's why Richard Nixon had to resign the presidency. Okay? That's why Richard Nixon had to resign the presidency. He had lost the moral authority to be governed and for people to take that high office of the White House seriously.
Huh.
Now, by the way, in the total scheme of things, the whole White House Watergate thing that caused Nixon to step down was very, very insignificant. But it was the cover-up that brought down the president. It wasn't the fact that the plumbers went into the Watergate building, because that's what happens in politics. You know, they spy on each other. You know, in today's world, nobody would even think of that with NASA and NSA and all of that stuff that's going on. Nobody would even care, you know, all these years later. But the problem was it went beyond, and that's why I say, is this the only thing that we should be looking at with regards to this candidate? Or maybe there are other things. You know, it's like when we take up the rug, are we just going to see dust that doesn't matter, or are we going to see some big chunks? So,
or big boulders.
Big boulders, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess that's the thing. So now a hypothetical question again is, okay, so based on what you're saying, Krista Sheeny should just recuse himself.
I think he should come clean and he would recuse himself if it turns out that he doesn't meet the criteria. I mean, if he does, and I'm saying that it might be that he does, has he ever answered that question, or did he confess to the fact that he is not fluent? I mean, that's an issue. Did he confess and say, no, people, I'm not fluent, but I'm ignoring that. That doesn't matter to me. I'm above the law.
Well, let me read this to you. This is right before you called in the Navajo Times, written by Bill Donovan. It says, officials for the Navajo Nation Office of Hearings and Appeals said Wednesday that all the grievances filed against Krista Sheeny for not being able to speak Navajo fluently have been dismissed, but not in a timely manner. And this Sheeny, who came in second, and I has been open about his lack of ability to speak Navajo, but has said in forums and public speeches that he is now in the process of learning the language. So does that clear him?
I heard you read that. It doesn't clear him. Here's why. If the statute or the rules of the voting body says you are okay so long as you pledge to learn it, did it say that? I mean, he's clear if the rules allows for that. But as I gauge the reading of the rules, it doesn't say if you're not proficient or fluent, but you are pledging to become. By the way, as you know, an adult learning a language that they didn't learn as a kid is not impossible, but it's damn near impossible. And I'm going to tell you something. If this dude tries to pull that flim-flam, people should really look at him with a little bit more of a jaundiced eyes. Here's why. it's not that easy to learn a language, okay? If it was that easy, he would have known it. He would have learned it already, okay? So who is he trying to fool? Who is he trying to fool?
That's a very good point. If he wanted to learn it, he should have learned it by now. And by the way, picking up a language, my son, who is full-blooded Navajo, but he is serving an LDS mission over in Paris, France, and
mm-hmm.
he left about 7 months ago, eight months ago, so he's been out there in Paris, France, and he is nearly fluent.
Right. Yeah,
think about
Seven months, and that's full-time effort all the time with all of the resources that he has available to him. But I know what this guy would say if he become president. He'd say, look, I'm too busy to – I know I told you guys that I was going to learn it, but I'm way too busy right now. I've got this that I'm doing, and he's going to be asking for another pass and another pass and another pass.
Caller, I've got another caller. Are you willing to come online and chat and talk and give us your opinion or a comment? 2562. Hello? Are you there? Can you hear me? I can hear you, but I guess they're just listening in. And people are actually on – I'm looking at Facebook where I'm posting stuff right on the – and people are more – this is really interesting. Hey, caller, people are now so curious about who you are now more than anything about – rather than even talking about Chris Discheatney. People are now having this big – contest or almost like a big guessing game. One person says, this guy, who is this? Who's this dude? He says, maybe it's Ben Shelley. another person said, he's the only person that's willing to call and everybody's welcome to call in. And another person says, I believe it's an African accent. Another person said he sounds Jamaican. So I don't know what Suba means. So another person put that in there. But yeah, I mean, you bring us a very interesting perspective. So boy, it is a tough one, and I'm really, really curious to find out what Richie Nez is going to say. Tomorrow night, he's the director of the Office of Hearings and Appeal, and what justified. You know, the part that I'm personally very curious about is the fact that, you know, the election's done. I've moved on. People have called me up and said, hey, would you like to do this, this, and this? And I just said, no. I have a life. I'm not trying to get a job. And I was trying to give something to the Navajo people. And apparently their wants and, you know, the preferences were way different. But the part that is still very unclear to me, and I'm going to ask this, and that is this. What difference does it make which period that you grieve and which period that you even submit your letter of grievance. Now, here's the thing. When I went in there, like I've said this on air many, many times, I walked in there, hi, here's my $1,500. The lady came to the counter, here's some paperwork, yada, yada, yada. I signed it up. And you need to go up to ethics and rules and get cleared. I went up there, got cleared, came back, finished filling out the rest of the stuff, and they said, okay, you're done, but you only need your your check. I gave him my check. I drove, and they said, walk down the hallway. I walked down the hallway, came back out, and by the next day, I was still curious to find out who all the people were, and of course, I then became very much involved in getting all of the my campaign people together, and were planning and getting. You know, there's just so much to do, and I just assume that everybody was abiding by the rules. I looked through it and said, okay, well, I speak Navajo, but I went through it. Yeah. Okay, good. And I signed a paper, moved on. I didn't go through and said, okay, well, that person, I don't know. What, 17 candidates? Who had the time to do that? And the first time that I ever really came across was that the first forum, which was in Pinon, Arizona, and here's this candidate sitting up there. And then a lot of people are now talking behind the scenes, and I was like saying, well, okay. So you
17 candidates times 1,500 apiece. That's some pretty good money. Who pocketed all of that? The guy who retired?
Well, that's a very good question. But, and that's the thing. So my point is this. Office of Hearing and Appeals says that your complaint as a candidate, he's talking to another candidate who filed against Krista Sheeny for not speaking, said that you cannot file because this very complaint that you make today or this grievance period should have been made in the first one. So I'm saying, what difference does it make? Because if I complained, still a complaint. And besides, I might have complained about that in the first place, in the first one, but if there was only one grievance period, but there's two grievance periods, is there anything specific to say in grieving period number one, you can only grieve this, and number two, you can only grieve this? It doesn't say that.
I still go back to the, when it comes to the issue of qualification, it's not a grievance. I think a grievance has to do with technicalities. When you're dealing with a fundamental issue as to qualifications, there is no period of grievance for that. That is either you qualify or you don't qualify. That's why I say if this gentleman is smart, he would pull an Obama. He would pull out his certificate and say, hey, look, here it is, cut it out, let's move on. And then everybody's going to agree and they'll move on. But like you said, he has acknowledged that he doesn't meet the criteria. So how do you have and how could people vote in good conscience for a candidate who doesn't meet the criteria? And if this guy doesn't meet this particular criteria, it's a good question to ask, what other criteria does he not meet? I don't know. Is this the only one?
Exactly. I mean, he's a Marine, so he should be absolutely straight up with everybody.
Well, that might be something that you call a white lie. Maybe the dude is telling a little white lie. It's a white lie. It's no big deal.
Oh, by the way, caller, there's another person who really gave you a compliment. He says, this guy is putting all you undeciders to shame. Ha, 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 ha. One lesson East Coasters know is never, never debate a Jamaican. I love it. That's good. So... I suppose.
Hey, Kyle, I've told you that there's been Navajos all over the place. You saw that for yourself.
Oh yeah. Well, certainly.
They're Jamaica Navajos.
Yeah, I. In fact, I have a. During the campaign, I went to this ceremony. It's called the Navajo Enemy Way Ceremony, and it is like, this is like out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, literally nowhere is where they set up camp, and there's no electricity, and usually the light is usually just from the bonfire there, and very, very beautiful scenery. And I went way out there, and the middle of the night, and up in the mountains, and so I'm over there walking around, and under one of the camps, one of the fire camps, is there's this fellow who was feeding people, cleaning the tables, gathering things, and being the most cordial Navajo you can imagine. And I'm saying this, quote, Navajo. He's being the most incredible Navajo. He was even out Navajoing Navajos.
Right.
And, when I got close to him, you know, of course I said, hi, how are you doing? He says, well, you know, and he says, hi, and I said, where are you from? He says, I'm from Los Angeles, California, he said. And it was very clear that he was African American. And it was the coolest thing. And he says, yes, my in-laws, my wife's over there, and here's my children, and, you know, I do this out all the time. I've been living out here for the past 25 years. Hmm. Think about that. You're right.
Yeah.
So some very cool stuff. So,
doesn't that bring us around to Joe Scholey's selection? I mean, he's got some Navajo blood in him, doesn't he?
You're talking about the Nebenali.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Nebenali, he is, his dad is Donald Benali, is half.
Who is,
and
right.
During the campaign, Donald used to get up on the forum speech and he says, well, my in-law is the Obama clan.
Okay.
And that was his, you know, that, and it made everybody laugh. And so, yeah. So that would make
a
quarter.
A quarter, okay. But you don't have, do you have blood criteria as you have language, or they don't get into that?
I don't think there's any blood quantum that I remember seeing in the qualification.
Well, I hope there isn't, but because Obama, right, who is more than 50% white, they call him the first black president. What an insult to his mother and her line. But that's a whole different story for another show.
You're right.
Yeah.
So, but he's the vice president.
Does he speak the language? Does he speak the language?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So here's my point. A guy who
he does speak Navajo adequately, but I have not heard him. The way I see it is that I was raised by traditional grandparents. So here's another thing that you bring up, and that is that the Navajo language, okay, there's my generation, then there's my mom and dad's generation, and then, of course, my grandparents. I was raised by my grandparents who did not speak English. And they spoke Navajo or English as much, or they knew as much English language as you know Navajo, probably.
Right.
And so there's that, what I consider to be absolutely fluent. And then there's another generation that is like the younger generation, which is very much Navalish.
Well,
a combination of Navajo and English.
I know a lot of older people. I would say if they're over 60 years old, okay, they may know English, but Navajo just come more naturally to them, that when they're in an important communication, they will slip right into Navajo because that conversation is so important that they go to the mother town, okay? And if you're over 60 years, I'd say you might fall in that category. So it isn't whether how many people could understand English. It's really how many people that understand Navajo. And this is an issue not about English. Let's not lose sight. It's an issue about Navajo.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Does that make sense?
The heavy
part of the conversation is not, well, oh yeah, there's most people can speak English now, so that, you know, it's okay. No. This is about the maintenance and the safeguarding of a culture that is important. And when you start picking away a foundational matters such as these, then your whole civilization is falling apart.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying earlier. Is this so much about the language, or is it about a candidate? In my opinion, people are trying to make it, it's about a candidate. I'm saying, no, the argument's not so much about a candidate. We're talking about the culture. It might come in
yeah.
the form of a woman candidate or
yeah.
a... You know, pure a blood quantum. You know, who's to say the next go around? Hey, by the way, you know, how much Navajo are you? Are you a quarter?
Right.
Are you full? You know, and then what? And then who's going to be assigned to? You know, so yes, that's what I think this is all about, and that is that if we break one of the cardinal rules about what defines us as Navajo, so to speak, then it sets a precedent that we're probably going to be breaking many others. And how stringent or how lenient are we going to be? That's something for the Navajo people are going to have to answer.
That's the proverbial throwing the baby out with the bathwater, cutting the baby in half after you throw it out with the bathwater. Oh, you cut the baby in half and then throw it out with the bath water. These are not just light issues. And when people say, well, don't beat a dead horse, it's like, come on. It's like, okay, you don't want to beat my dead horse, but I want to flog yours. You know, we can't
yeah.
pick and choose on these issues. That's all I'm saying. By the way, whatever happened to Max?
He's resting.
Okay.
He's resting. He's doing good.
All right. I've got some people that would like to come see him.
Boy, certainly.
All right. Okay.
So, yeah. And so all you listeners out there, you know, you're welcome to call in. It sounds like that a lot of people are listening, and I am just very grateful that you're listening to this program. Tomorrow night, we're going to have Richie Nez from the Office of Hearings and Appeal, and it should be a very interesting question. And not only am I going to be talking about Chris, I'm also going to be talking about Joe. I'm going to talk about Joe Shirley, or Dr. Joe Shirley Jr., and we will talk about what doctorate degree is. We will talk about what ONSAT is and what BCDS. We will talk about
I have a question, and
the vice president.
I have,
so there's so many different things that will be.
I have
yeah,
a
go
question.
Ahead. Ask me the question.
I have a question with respect to culture. Now, as I understand it, Joe Shirley was also able to perform certain rituals with respect to his qualifications. What do you know of the role that he played, not just as president, but as a leader, an elder, in terms of spiritual rituals?
Well, that one, you know, honestly, very honestly, I don't know. That is almost to the point of maybe there's listeners out there who know about what you're talking about. That's,
I know, typically,
medicine man doesn't come out and say, hey, by the way, I'm a medicine man. If that's what
you're referring,
are you saying that's a...
Well, that's not the criteria that you wear on your shoulder, but I know, and of course you never know all of the degrees of a person. You just know what you know. But I've seen him perform prayers for at least one event. As not just the president of the nation, but also a spiritual man. And I think he was more in the capacity of a spiritual person. Now, I don't know how that stands off with a lawyer, because some people may say, but he's a lawyer, you know?
Yeah. And but one thing I know that I saw, in fact, I saw it on the video on YouTube, and that was that Joe Shirley actually singing a Navajo song at a public gathering. I was very, very impressed with his, you know, his ability to sing. I thought, wow, that's really, really cool. And
I don't know. I can't say that I know the gentleman personally. You know, we've been in the same room on a number of occasions, but then there were hundreds of people in the room. But guess what? I sat at his table and I was, you know, close up with him on a number of occasions. He seems to be a genteel man. Would you describe him that way? I mean, he seemed, at least the times that I've been, you know, quiet, more, it would be described as quiet.
Well, I know Dr. Joe Shirley Jr. from many different perspectives. One is that, yes, I work with him during his two administration. I have worked with him on a personal level. I have also have worked with him on, not work with him, but we're both candidates this past,
primary
season.
And
so I saw a different part of him as an opponent, as to...
Did he have fight? I mean, I missed all of the debates, but did he have some fire in his belly?
Well, you know, the thing that's very interesting, the 17... You know, the 17 that ran, the thing that I was very disappointed with, the entire process of, was that we never had an opportunity to have a debate, a forum where there was this, you know, one question we're matched up with a group of panelists.
May I bring in my political wisdom? May I bring in my political wisdom? And this might be somewhere. This might be somewhere you, based on who you are, and who you're becoming. Because as you know, everybody thinks they know people. Of course, you need to know yourself first. And like you said, by observation and by working on certain things, you tend to know people. But I say this in a lot of seriousness in terms of some of the things that you could do and influence. Debates in the United States came about primarily by a group known as the Woman for Stopping Electoral Suppression of Women. The League of Women Voters. That's who put it on. That's where debate started. Before CNN started jumping in and YouTube started having theirs and MTV started having, which is good because the more the merrier, okay? You have to realize that you have young voters and you got to meet them on Twitter, okay? Then you've got older voters. You got to meet them at the county fair and the different things, okay? So you got to meet, you got to be smooth and suave, okay?
You got to know your demographics, yeah.
Okay. So here you are talking about 2014, and the nation doesn't have a debate. Well, it seems like that's a real wide opening, if you were a football player, for you to do a touchdown on a presidential debate before the rest of the season, moderated by former candidates on the radio. I mean, if we can't pull that off, I don't know what we could pull. But by the way, I'm really glad to hear you saying that you have some heavyweights on the show coming on booked ahead. That means people are beginning to take you seriously. And I want to say this so that these listeners that don't want to get on the phone, which, by the way, listening is great, but what about hearing yourself say the things that you know that needs to be said, but for some reason you're a little bit too shy to bring it out? Now, I say that in all respect, but what you're doing, Cal, needs to be commended, and you need to, it seems like you've now staked out a real good position. Should we call you the Rush Limbaugh of Denailand, okay? Are you more of a Glenn Beck, you know, or are you more of a Sean Hannity, or are you all of them put together? You know, I don't know. But having the microphone, Cal, is a very important and sacred responsibility.
Oh, certainly.
And it has to be used judiciously, because it could build up or tear down. And nothing is wrong with being one or the other or both, because there are times that people need to be built up, and there are times that people need to be called on the carpet. And that, my friend, really is the role of the media. So when you start getting upset with Cal, or you start getting upset with somebody because you think they're always on a horse, hey, that's what the jockey has the horse for, to ride that horse. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I think you're doing well. I say that I put in my own two cents on this. You just hit on something that caught my attention. If there was no debate among the 17 people, we better get to a debate really fast, wherein one of the questions might be, in 10 seconds or less, let's see your proficiency with vocabulary. If I say hula hoop, you give me 10 words that has close association. Now, I know you wouldn't be that hard, because there's a lot more important subjects, but I recommend that you use your forum in concert with maybe the Chamber of Commerce or something like that, to have the first ever Navajo debate broadcast live on a co-production with Cal Nez and Viral Press. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say.
All righty. Well, that sounds good. And I am very much, I was thinking about that, and really hold a formal debate. A debate. I mean, I used to be a member of a debate team in high school at South High School in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I know what a debate format is. The only thing that came closest to a debate for the Navajo Nation presidential primary season campaign was the one that was held in ASU. Very interesting.
Okay, Cal, here's what I'm going to say. And see if you can sum this up as a former candidate and now as a broadcaster, the Dan Rather of the Dene people. Okay, so here we are in 2014. Technology galore, iPhones, YouTube, up, down, Twitter, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it seems like this is the opportunity, and I believe this is why you got in the race, so that you can bring your savvy just as a graphic artist, as an entrepreneur, to the people. And I hope somewhere along the different debates that people got to know you for those different dimensions, because that's a lot of different dimensions. Artist, entrepreneur, activist, you know. So you have become someone, I say that to put on a debate like you would expect to have on the radio, because that's where they started, on the radio. By the way, Viral Press brings the camera. Then you got a simulcast broadcast radio. You cover it with a YouTube thing so that people all over, not just on the res, which is all spread out. So what's better way to reach them other than technology? By the way, you know, that is the channel. You just opened it up. I remember years ago when we started talking about the possibilities, and I'm glad to see that you got the idea that new media, new technology trumps every day what the old situation was with the towers and with the studios and with the all that it takes to put one of those stations. And guess what? They don't have any more audience than you or I.
Certainly. Yep.
Because you're reaching people all over the world.
Yeah. Well, this is well, you know, I would say that the internet radio is probably internet certainly is reaching out quite a ways, and we are getting close to shutting down. It is about 4 minutes. And caller, thank you very much for calling in. And as usual, 5 minutes left to go in the show, and I'm getting tons of calls right now. So you kept us very entertained, and I'm going to ask you to call back in because you seem to be very, very knowledgeable about the Navajo Nation government, and to be possibly even to be, you know, a sidekick to the show here coming up here. So
well, I want to tell you that I am a person that understands that humanity is all connected. We're all related. But even on a higher level, when you get to know good people that take you in as family, then you get past the whole issue of how much language can you speak, because there's a connection there, a real deep connection, and that's what I have with the Dene people.
Awesome. Well, thank you, and call back again. And tomorrow night we're going to have the Office of Hearings and Appeal. And thanks for calling in, caller. You've given a lot of very good insight. In fact, you were very, very popular on Facebook. People are making comments. Honestly, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if we came to a resolution. It is a very, very difficult thing that we're talking about, and that is the Navajo language. What do we do? And really, I think it's in the hands of Mr. Chris Dischivi. We don't know exactly what he's going to do, and probably right now, nothing. And so it's going to leave it to the law. And so whether that's right or wrong, and these are some of the things that we should have been looking at way, way long before this time has come. And that is that we need to look at our laws. We need to look at things that we're doing from business through our laws and the application of law, and to bring on a whole new ideology on the Navajo Nation so that we can grow and become part of the global machinery. Right now, it's like it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to people. And we're going back to the same cycle, and I don't know if that's important or not important to people, but to me, I think it is important. I think we need to continually to look outside the box. And thank you, listeners. I said, "Non hitashnido les ada nada isio kizigi koe akisnada huizneo kuje na ol kicho." Let's see, we have about 1 minute left to go in the show. And today is my 30th year anniversary being married to my lovely wife, Yolanda Francisco Nez. And I love you. I thank you. You are awesome and 30 years that you've been putting up with me. We will talk to you tomorrow night, and we will hear from you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Yala, you're listening to Navajo Politics with Cal Nez.
Yeah.